WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for sharing part of your day with us. Whether you're listening on the radio, online, or on demand, I am grateful you are here. Coming up later in the show today, conversations about elite athletes and mental health. Champion tennis player Naomi Osaka made headlines this week following her decision to step away from the French Open, citing mental health concerns. We'll speak with journalist Caitlin Thompson, co-founder of Racquet magazine. Then we'll hear from 8-time Olympic skating medalist Apollo Ono, who was featured in an HBO documentary called The Weight of Gold, about how and why Olympians often find themselves with mental health issues. And then later, we'll have some music for your afternoon. We'll have a listening party for the indie rock duo known as Bachelor. Their debut album, titled Doomin Sun, a review in the Times, noted that songwriter Ellen Kempner and Melina Duterte bring out each other's best ideas in an alliance that glances back at bands like Belly, Breeders, and Liz Phair. I am on board for that. That is all in the way, so let's get this started. Drama is the name of a new book that asks us to consider the power of spaces and what's built in those spaces, how we live in those spaces, and how those who design those spaces think about us. Well, it might seem that in a world of design, a firm or an individual would specialize in, say, just hospitals or just parks or restaurants. The Rockwell Group, led by David Rockwell, imagines all kinds of spaces based on certain principles and elements. And those elements are discussed in his new book, Drama. We learn about audience and empathy, movement and memory. The book also features David Rockwell in conversation with other creatives, including Quincy Jones, Jose Andres, and Anna Deavere Smith. And the book has a lot of really pretty photographs. After all, it is published by Phidon. Central to Drama's mission is the exploration of the intersection of architecture and theater, where Rockwell has created his own lane. Having designed sets for Broadway shows like Rocky Horror and Hairspray, he won a Tony in 2016 for She Loves Me and turned Central Park's Delacorte Theater into a mysterious forest for A Midsummer Night's Dream. Rockwell writes, quote, "Buildings, spaces, all things become more meaningful when they are designed around people, around stories, around feelings. That's the connection with theater. Theater, too, reflects our lives and our experiences. It embodies our stories and our emotions. And like a building, theater is nothing without its audience. Architecture and theater are both defined by the people that inhabit and animate them. Without an audience enlivening the streets, its museums, its restaurants, a city is only an empty frame." Drama is available now, and the proceeds from the sale of the book will go to the actorsfund.org, which provides a safety net for performing arts professionals. And I'm so glad David Rockwell is able to join us. Hi, David.
Hello. Thank you very much. I'm grateful to be here.
So listeners, what's a space that evokes a feeling for you or triggers a memory for you? Was there a space you couldn't wait to return to once COVID restrictions were eased, a museum, a restaurant, a green space? How are you thinking about spaces differently after a year of isolation and now the ability to move around? Or maybe you have a question for David Rockwell about one of the spaces that he's created. Our number is 646-435-7280. 646-435-7280. You can also tweet to us at All of It WNYC. So, David, I have to ask about your childhood. It's a great story you tell in the book about that your mom was a vaudeville dancer, and it seems like the whole family got in on the act. How were you involved?
It's true. Well, I was the youngest, so you sort of, in putting together a book, you get to look at things in a rearview mirror and understand them a way that you have no idea when you're in the process. But I've never seen a boundary between theater and architecture, and I do realize part of it is being brought up in a world in which theater was community theater, right out of Waiting for Guffman, was the most alive place in the community where everyone wanted to participate. And I started to become intrigued about the way design can tell stories and engage people. And that began kind of a lifelong evolution of looking at theater and then public spaces. And in Mexico, of course, I moved when I was 12 to a place that was all public theater. The private homes are very small. So those are the things I try and unpack a little bit in the book is, why are there so many powerful elements from things that are ephemeral, like a theater performance, that impact how we feel about something as permanent as our city and the spaces in it?
You share a story in the book about when you were in school at Syracuse for architecture, and you realized you were creating narratives for your work and your project, and you actually got in a little bit of trouble for that. One, why
it
did
is
you,
true.
Why did you do it? And then why would that be seen as problematic in traditional architecture circles?
And why do I remember it so well? That's the real question. But it was what was called a figure ground project. So you were building a model that looked at open spaces and solid spaces and studying pattern and movement. And it was a narrow townhouse-like space accommodating two different people living there. And I just felt that I needed some backstory to inform the decisions, or they just felt arbitrary. And it began a dialogue with school that went through, my time there, ultimately sort of forming my way of thinking about things and extracting a backstory so that design decisions aren't arbitrary, but they're much like, story in theater gives every one of the professionals, the lighting designer, the choreographer, the set designer, a key way in. We do the same thing in my design studio for buildings. And that started in school. And I luckily had to fight through some resistance, which I think helps build up, kind of head of steam and commitment.
Why? I'm curious, why would there be resistance to that? It makes sense to me. I mean, it seems like a really good way to think about buildings, thinking about them, not just as drawings and designs and beautiful lines and all the like.
Well, I think the first reason for that is architecture is taught in a form that involves critiques. So it's one of the ways you learn to develop commitment about ideas is there's a group of jurors that looks at your project and their job is to try and dig into the process and help build skills. And I think the skill they were trying to build was a skill of what's an interesting proportion for a figure ground and how do you carve up space vertically. And I found that was a much more interesting process if I could get inside the why of it and the who of it, who was living there and why. So I think part of the challenge was just the built-in way architecture is taught. And I think the other one, it was not in the guidebook of year two modernist training.
My guess is David
It wasn't
Rockwell.
In year three either.
My guess is David Rockwell. The name of the book is Drama. So when you have this beautiful book, it looks like it's got a deep blue, sort of cobalt blue cover, which is like a curtain, like a theater curtain. And then you open it up and the first thing we see is the back of people's heads, a photograph. So you really do believe deeply in this idea of audience, and which makes sense to us in terms of theater. But how does the idea of audience apply to architecture?
Well, a couple of ways. One is buildings ultimately shape our experience, and they shape how we feel about it from the outside. They build anticipation. They shape how we move through a space and how things unfold. And I found in the process of doing the book, which took several years because mm-hmm. I have discovered projects that take a long time, have a kind of richness, and I had to find the way into looking at the relationship of theater and architecture. In empathy, an audience became the organizing element. Mm-hmm. And I think in buildings, we tend to remember how we felt in relation to the spaces around us. But generally, architecture is described, if people think about New York City, the iconic view is from the air where we see these amazing skyscrapers. But the definition of how we feel about our architecture is really from the inside out. So I think an audience in a building are the people who experience it, the people who work there. And it's just the way our process starts. We start with research and looking at the building from the inside out.
Listeners, we want to get you in on this conversation. What is a space that evokes a feeling or triggers a memory for you? Was there a space you couldn't wait to return to when COVID restrictions were eased? Or maybe you have a question for David Rockwell about one of the many spaces he's created in our city. Our number is 646-435-7280. We have several calls already. Let's check in with Tracy on line two. Hi, Tracy. Thanks for calling All of It. You're on the air.
Hi. So I just wanted to share my favorite building in New York is the Ford Foundation Center. I think the level of craft is amazing. It's an office building, but the public has access and it has this amazing garden. I also love that the glass windows or doors are operable, so you can open and close them. And yeah, that's all.
Thanks for calling
in. I love that example. That's one of my favorite buildings. Amazing.
Let's talk to Margaret on line three. Hi, Margaret. Thanks for calling All of It. You're on the air.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I have to say my favorite building in New York is Grand Central Terminal. I love being in that space. I love looking up at the ceiling. I love the history of that building. I love the glass walls that you can walk on different floors and walk around the circumference of the building. I love how at 2 o'clock in the morning, this place is deserted, but it's got this film noir feeling. I love how during the day there are thousands and thousands of people that come through. There are all these hidden rooms. It's got this amazing plaza underneath. It's got the great, you know, the thing outside the Oyster Bar where you can hear tell secrets across the quad there. It's one of my favorite places in New York. And every time I'm in that building, I just feel pure joy. Thank you.
I love how much you love that, Margaret.
What a great entry. So great. What a great entry to New York it is, too. It really celebrates all that's great about New York.
And David, you know in the book that, you know, space affects the unconscious in many ways. How so? What's an example, and how do you and your designers, how do you work with that?
Well, using Grand Central as an example, that's as carefully choreographed as any piece of theater you've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
How you flow into the main space, how there's a central icon that organizes where you are, how there's balconies. You can be an audience or a performer depending on where you sit. So I think space is used to set up a sequence. You enter through lower spaces and the space kind of explodes in Grand Central. And all of those elements are usable in crafting a space. When we created the JetBlue terminal at JFK, one of the challenges was the amount of people who were going to flow through. So we brought in a Broadway choreographer, which the CEO of JetBlue was a little, doubted a bit until we got into the discussion of, if you look at New York as a dance, how would you enter this building? And I do believe it's one of the things, both examples, the Ford Foundation of the Grand Central get right. And that's an example with JetBlue where we looked at how space gets you ready to leave the city, where you're slowing down into the rhythm of the airport, or speed up when you're coming into the city, accelerating the speed of the city, were, you know, design strategies.
Yeah, you note that you're someone who likes to think about movement and choreography. And, you know, humans are so funny about what they will and won't do, about where they will and won't go. How can you, as a designer, what impact will you have on the way humans move in the world? And how do you take into consideration what we will do and won't do?
Well, you mentioned the word world, which I love in the context of in theater. Of course, every performance takes place in a new world with the audience sitting there, and it takes you to wherever you're going. I believe spaces do that too, but in a different way. They do that with fragments that can trigger memory. They do that with heightening elements. We're familiar with one of my favorite projects we've ever had a chance to do was Imagination Playground in Lower Manhattan post 9/11. And then we did a second one in Brooklyn. And it takes the world of kids building in small blocks and scales it up to kids actually connecting and making their own world. So I think, looking at not necessarily a hermetically sealed world, but a world in which people can find their way in and find their own way was one of the things I learned in the process of the book, where I wanted to analyze what are those elements that relate to both. And triggering collective memories, I think, is a positive, strong element that we embrace.
Let's take another call. Jane is on line for calling in from Montreal, actually. Hi, Jane. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, everyone. I am actually making a picnic right now for me and a new friend to check out a park here in Montreal called Frederick Back. And it's a brand new park. And from what I understand, it's built on top of a landfill. And they're using the biogas as a form of electricity to power some of the things in the park. It's not yet finished, but I just wanted to say, like, I saw the pictures of it. I've never been there yet, but I'm really excited to go and check it out in about an hour because it looks so beautiful. And for a city like Montreal, like for something to stand out here, you know, because the whole city is already so beautiful. And, I actually moved here from New York because of how beautiful it was. That was literally the only reason. I felt something different here than I've never felt in another city before. And just for a place to even be so special, it's so avant-garde. Like, there are these incredible sculptures and just really cool things for the community to do. There's, I urge you to check it out. I've never been, but I'm excited to find out what it's all about.
Love that you're doing that today.
That sounds
Thank
great.
You for sharing it. Doesn't that sound great, David? My guest is David Rockwell. The
so
name
good.
Of his new book is Drama. After the break, we'll talk about some of the theater work David has done. We actually have an architecture student who has a question for you about theater design. David, stay with us. This is All of It. You are listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. David Rockwell is my guest this hour. His new book is called Drama, and it really explores the intersection between architecture and theater. We have a couple of calls on hold, but I did want to dive in a little bit to talk about some of your theater work, David. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Rocky Horror was your first Broadway show?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
So, okay, first of all, you sign on to this huge project, a project with quite a bit of history and legacy to it. When you sat down and thought about your goal, what was it?
So I had never seen the movie because I lived in Mexico from 12 to 18. So I had a blip of popular culture I missed. I watched the movie and I went to the director, who's a great director named Chris Ashley. And I had been sketching for 4 or 5 years for directors pursuing working in theater and trying to find common language. And I said to Chris, why would anyone want to do this? I don't get it. And he said, you need to see it with people because this show is the ultimate experience of the audience being part of the invention. So as I started to think about that, I of course fell in love with the piece as a way for the audience from the very beginning to buy in. So I started with lots of research and thinking about what were the moments what were going to be the large transformative moments in which the set can bring the audience to a different place. So a disproportionate amount of the resources went into those moments where there was real emotional opportunity, like moving from the pre-show, which looked like it was set in a B-movie theater, where the theater literally flipped around and the world of Rocky Horror appeared. And it was, you know, the beginning of such a amazing privilege for me to work with the theater community on so many projects. And I started to recognize that ideas that I developed in one field were very applicable to the other.
On the other end of the spectrum, you know, Rocky Horror was, you know, colorful and a spectacle in the best way. I didn't know that you did Lobby Hero, which is a drama where the location is actually, you know, very, it's the lobby. A lot of it takes place. It's very sparse. It's very dark. It's building entrances and exits. I'm curious what went into designing that set, which is powerful in its sort of, I know it's not simplicity, but in its starkness.
Such a great question. It's one of the reasons what I mentioned fragments is if you don't create the complete picture, the audience is drawn into it. So with Lobby Hero, I had just completed the renovation of the Hayes Theater, which is one of the 41 amazing Broadway theaters, and was really one of the amazing honors of my life to be as an architect entrusted with renovating that. And then we did the first play in there. So I felt myself pivoting from the walls, looking at the walls of the theater, to the stage and thinking about lobbies, which are, it's really about isolation. They're isolated in the lobby. And we made the decision to actually have no walls other than the door and the door to the elevator, but have the compression be between the ceiling and the floor. So it's about a kind of being trapped in the space. So we created a short space where the ceiling and the floor would rotate and pivot at the same time. So as these different people tell the story of their experience in the lobby, we shift perspective, almost like a camera shift. But there are no walls, and it's open to a cyclorama. And it was a great, great gift to be able to do that.
Let's go to Daniel on line 5, who is an architecture student. Hi, Daniel. Thanks for calling All of It. You are lucky today because you're on the phone with David Rockwell.
Hi. Great to hear from you, David. Can you guys hear
Daniel.
Me?
Yeah, Daniel, go for it.
Hi. Yeah, so my question would be whether or not there was some more freedom to design because you didn't have to necessarily have continuity and plan or in section where you could just design rooms on their own and the audience would never pick up on any differences, you know, compared to maybe an architecture major or student or an architect.
So the question is, is there freedom in designing sets for you?
There, you know, I would say there's a different toolbox. So you mentioned plan and section, which are where, you know, you have to start every project, and that's true in theater as well. You're starting with plan and section. Because remember, in section, you're studying sight lines, so you want to create a picture that everyone can see. But the new element, there's many new elements, and there's several new elements that I think are relevant to architecture. And one of them is the notion of ensemble. So when you see one thing move in the theater, for that thing to move, that transition, it took a lighting designer, a set designer, a tech director, a choreographer, a director, actors, all people who that couldn't have happened without everyone's expertise. And I think that kind of team building and ensemble building of different thought leaders is a great model for how to deal with a piece of architecture where you have a low budget, or it's a landmark building, or there's a public health pandemic you have to respond to. So I think the team part of it is very useful. The design element that is I think, in theater that you don't have an architecture is that things move in real time. So you have to take into account the light safety and the kind of cinematic quality of things unfolding and moving. But you still need to kind of master plan and section and color and texture, just with a different kind of point of view.
Let's go to Pedro, who's calling in from Greenpoint on line two. Hi, Pedro. Thanks for calling All of It. You're on the air.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me. Hi, David. I just want to ask if you've ever heard of this term called psychogeography when it comes to the unconscious or subconscious of roaming around the city and being either attracted or repelled by the architecture itself.
No, I'd love to know more about it. Psychogeography?
Yeah, it was this term developed by this French theorist in the 60s or 70s, I believe, Guy Debord, kind of like a precursor to French New Wave and a lot of those kind of ideas coming out of France at that time. So, I don't know, something I've always been very interested in and kind of goes back to Walter Benjamin and his idea of like the Art Age project. So I just found everything you were saying today very relevant in that regard.
Pedro, I appreciate it. I'll look into it.
Thank you for calling in. You know, I'm curious about, in terms of, I was interested in Daniel's point about freedom and if designing sets brings you freedom. But I was curious about some of the parameters, because in some theater pieces, you need to be historically accurate, but you also need to be creative. How did you or do you balance the need for accuracy and creativity?
I think you start, in every case, whatever the design project is, in deep research. And, you know, research leads you into unexpected places. It can lead you into the history of the place. It can lead you into a theory of looking at space, as we just heard about. So we fill rooms with context and research and understanding as much as we can about. If it's a restaurant, we'll extract a narrative about the place and the person. Mm. If it's a hospital, we'll build a narrative around their point of view and care and meet with doctors and understand the critical points. And then from there, you take that and try and conjure a solution that in some ways is not a linear line from what all the research tells you. And it, you know, so but it all starts out with as much understanding as we can. And the, as an example, the Dine Out project, which was a non-for-profit we set up right after COVID with the shutdown, March 13th is in April. I reached out to Melba Wilson, an amazing restaurateur in Harlem, who was the president of the Hospitality Alliance and been a friend for decades. And the research we were doing is, what do restaurants need to start to come back and for customers to feel emotionally safe? And it led to an idea of outdoor dining. And then we collected points of view around the country about how to do that, engage the city, in some ways encourage the city to make legislation to do that, and then raised money around that. And it's the same process as building a narrative for an architecture piece or a theater piece. So I think, you know, if you have an underpinning of research, then you have the ability to leap into, as you said, you know, sort of dreaming.
You've done a lot of work during COVID, and you've done the Dine Out project for nonprofit. You, of course, the Oscars this year in an unusual space. And you're currently working on a theater project that will take place in the Meatpacking District, Seven Deadly Sins. And I understand the performances will take place in storefront windows?
They will. It's seven single or two-person plays, all written by amazing playwrights. And they'll be on Gansenfort and 13th Street. Between the two streets, seven really mini theaters, each in the storefront with 24 seats on the sidewalk. It's been an unbelievable opportunity to dive into microsurgery. You can imagine the theaters are teeny, and the audience will be listening on headphones, and you move from play to play. So you build up the evening over the seven plays. You begin the evening in an installation called Purgatory, where you have a drink and there's music, and then you break into groups, and as a group you explore these stories and these locations that are different but unified with a graphic approach, and really in some ways I think maybe setting a model for people getting comfortable being out in smaller groups, hearing stories, and moving back towards going to theaters.
David, what's a space that is meaningful for you?
Well, I mentioned the Delacorte. Did I mention the Delacorte Theater? I didn't. That's one of my favorite places in the world. And Central Park by extension. I think what's happened on the waterfront on the west side of Manhattan over, you know, many, many years is just so inspirational. I love the new little park that opened up. I love walking through the theater district and seeing all of those buildings, which are so small in the front because they're, you know, they're built as attached buildings, but sort of thinking about the expansive lives that happen that open up behind them. So I love the contrast of big and small that New York offers, and I'm really grateful to see people back on the street because it was really like a very empty theater there for a year.
The name of the book is Drama. David Rockwell, architect and set designer, thank you so much for spending so much time with us and taking calls from our listeners.